I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, I'm excited to have in the studio, sitting right here next to me, is Yasmin Ramirez. Yasmin is well known to most of us here in El Paso, especially those involved in the literary scene. She's, I would say, a literary activist. She's a literary activist, a fantastic writer. I've read her nonfiction. And I actually read a couple of your short stories. You were in classes with me when you were a student in the MFA program years ago. Mm-hmm. Yasmin is... Before I go on, just say hello. Say hello.
Hello.
That's Yasmin. She graduated here with her MFA, and now she is an associate professor at El Paso Community College.
Yes, I am.
And you are the director or one of the leaders of the creative writing program that's emerging out of the English department, aren't you?
Yeah, so we're working really hard on it. It's a longer process than we thought it would be, but we're working on it.
And how long ago did you graduate?
I graduated in 2013.
2013.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a while.
Well, you know, you are one of the blessed ones. You got a job because jobs for writers are very hard to get. Let me read your bio quickly just so people can know who you are.
Okay.
Yasmin Ramirez is a native of El Paso. She stays active in the literary community and writes And Then, a weekly blog. Are you consistently writing a blog a week?
No, it is tough. It's more like, right now it's more once a month.
Okay.
During the semester, it's really hard. In the summer, I try to take summers off,
uh-huh.
So I just write.
Right, right.
And that's a lot easier once a week. But
right.
During the semester, things start to pile up.
You know, keeping a blog is a lot like getting a gym membership. You're going to go, you know, every other day and you know it. Then once you know it, like 2 weeks passes.
I think that's a great analogy.
Anyway, blogs are tough, but I love your blog. I think your blog is fantastic. And so you write the weekly blog. It's called And Then. And then your work is featured in Huizache. It's a great journal. Hispanic Culture Review and Cream City Review. Those are all very, very good reviews. And probably what makes you an outstanding example of literary genius is you graduated with your MFA at UTEP.
That's icing, right?
Yeah. So, Yasmin, tell us, you know, I want to get to just the core of you being a writer. I mean, I appreciate that you're a literary activist and that you're a professor and that you're doing wonderful things with the creative writing program at EPCC. And hopefully we'll have time to talk about that. But I want to talk to you as a writer. And you graduated a couple of years ago. You have a full-time job. You're very active. You write a blog. How do you keep writing? And how come you haven't given up yet?
Oh, that's a good question. Sometimes I feel like I've given up because I'll go, you know, a couple weeks mm-hmm. without writing. When I'm not writing, I try to read, at least. Right. That's like my link. But I think it's pure stubbornness.
Right.
Honestly, I'm just stubborn about it. And then also, in my writing process, I realized that I'll see something that'll happen, like a scene uh-huh. or an image, and it'll stay with me and it won't go away. It
right.
sort of like nags me until I write something. And it comes from the simplest thing. Like I wrote a short story because I was driving down the street and I saw a red balloon fly out of a man's car.
Oh, nice.
And I just thought that was a really beautiful image, you know, because it was a bright, sunny day and this red balloon just flying up into the sky. That stuck with me, and I made a whole story out of just that
right.
that one thing.
Yeah.
So
wait, let me isolate this, because
yeah.
I think what you're getting onto is something I found out a lot of really amazing writers do. So you saw this image, and it was a red balloon coming out of a car, and that image was so stark, and I could see why it would be, because just as you describe it, it's a beautiful image, and that image wouldn't leave you alone. How much time between when you saw the image and it started to incubate within your soul and the time that you put it out on paper, how much time was there between the two?
I would say probably a few weeks.
See, then you were writing during those two weeks because you were thinking about
right.
it.
Right, yeah, I was thinking about it. I guess when I think writing, I think actively sitting
yeah,
at
yeah.
my laptop. But no, I was
butt
thinking
time.
About it.
You were
it.
Thinking of butt time, where we sit on our butts and
yes.
we write. Yeah.
Yes, but no, I was thinking of what I would do, how I would make a story out of it.
Right.
And so I ended up just making the story of a man trying to drive to his significant other's to make up for something he did. Mm-hmm. We don't know what he did.
But probably something really messed up.
Something really messed up. And he has, you know, three balloons in the car that are shaped like a heart. So I changed uh-huh. that a little bit.
Right.
And so one floats out.
The heart.
The heart.
They have metaphorical possibilities. I see it.
Yeah. So I just had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, I amped up the heat of the day and nice. I put him in an older car. So he didn't want to roll down the window because of balloons. But then he was sweating in the car.
Oh, I care about this character already.
Right. He's amazing. A really great character. I don't even know. He doesn't have a name.
Right.
But, you know, and I was working more on flash fiction at that time. So I was trying to keep within that 500 words. So when I wrote him, I was like, oh, I feel so bad for this man. And so, I mean, I felt bad for him. So,
you know, and it's interesting that you said he doesn't have a name, yet I feel for him just the way you described him. This character has become real. And I remember a creative writing professor of mine pointed out to a student in a workshop who kept repeating the name in a dialogue, you know, John said, and then John started to think about it. And he says, take away all those Johns and put a he, and your reader will be more intimate with that character. There's something about the name, when you say the name, that others the character.
Right.
But when it's he, it somehow brings us closer.
Well, I think also because we don't speak that way.
Right.
I don't say like, hi, Daniel. How are you, Daniel? How was your day, Daniel?
Right.
That would be very odd. So we hardly say each other's names in real life.
Right, right.
So I think that's one of the things. I have this other quick story. I used to eavesdrop on conversations.
Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely. You used to. You don't do it anymore.
I still do it, but I did it more actively at the time. It was in between my bachelor's and the MFA. I worked in retail, so I worked in a mall.
Oh, and you were in Dallas, weren't you?
I lived in Dallas, yeah. So I would go to the food court. I tell this story to my creative writing students all the time, and at first they look at me like I'm weird. So I'd go to the food court, I'd have lunch, but I always had my journal with me, and I would write down people's conversations. Because I found it interesting the way they would have really intimate conversations in really public spaces or just the cadence of their voice.
Right.
And so I think I learned right away that we don't say people's names.
Right,
and sometimes
right.
people's names don't really matter.
Right,
it's
right.
the what they're experiencing that affects us.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I was listening to this podcast, and one of the strategies that the interviewer was using is by repeating the name of the person, the first and last, so that the audience wouldn't forget, right? So if I were like, you know, even I do that on this show, I'll say, I'm in the studio talking to Yasmin Ramirez. But that repeating of the name, it somehow draws that person outside of a social, intimate, emotional circle and puts them up more as maybe an authority or something else. I mean, even on that level, it loses the intimacy. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. I think also when we think about when we use people's names in real life, it's usually we're upset.
Right. Oh, right? Yes.
We're upset. You only say someone's name when you're upset or if you're calling them, like you're trying to get their attention. Other than that.
That's right. Because when I'm in any part of the house and I say, Jolene, or Jolene says, Daniel, I know, you know, it's not the next thing isn't going to be, I love you.
Right. No, it's not ever. It's never used that way.
Wow. See, and that's the cool thing about being a writer, because you said, you know, sometimes you don't write for 2 weeks, but being a writer is that butt time. That's for sure. You need that discipline time, but every writer has their own way of making that time. And but what's more important is the discipline of thinking like a writer, of living in the moment day to day, so that you can experience those conversations and make those kind of things. So you can notice the red balloon, because if you were on your phone checking Instagram while you were at a stoplight, you would have missed that red balloon. And writers need to learn how to put down their phones and experience the beauty of just
being.
Everything. Yeah, the beauty of being. There
it's
you go.
Being, yeah, because you're just seeing, you're looking at the scenery, looking at how people interact, especially without, you know, I just admitted to actively eavesdropping very often, but something I like to do with my husband, but we'll see something happening and we'll make up the dialogue based off their body language.
Right, right.
And I guess
that's fun.
That's the benefit of being married to someone who has, you know, who's a writer, who's very creative also. So we'll make up dialogue based off of how people are moving. Because you can tell so much by body language.
Do you guys each take a character? Like if there's a man and a woman, he might take the man, you'll take the woman.
We definitely do that.
Wonderful.
It's very cheesy,
that.
But we like to do that.
Yeah, no, actually, there's a scene in Annie Hall where the Woody Allen character, but this scene where him and Annie Hall are watching couples in some sort of park in New York, and they're doing that, and it's kind of funny.
It's really, I think that's so much fun, because then you're being creative, but it's fun and lighthearted, and then something can sometimes come from it.
I'm talking to Yasmin Ramirez. I'm only reminding you so you remember that name, because she's producing some great work and she's doing some wonderful things, but not to separate you from being intimate in this conversation. But I'm thinking of you projecting conversation on these couples, you know, and it's fun to do. I do that too. I think a lot of writers love to just sit and people watch. In fact, I think human beings who are in the moment love to people watch, you know. But we writers take it to a discipline almost,
right,
you know,
yes.
And we play with it, you know. But there's this concept in brain science and neuroscience, which, you know, I'm just kind of like studying as a layperson for research of my next novel. But I love this idea. It's called theory of mind. And what this means is that human beings are the only animals, the only species capable of projecting consciousness on others. And we're so good at it that we could actually see somebody or a couple and be pretty close to accurate when we're guessing what they're talking about or guessing what's on their mind, that we do have that capacity. Sometimes we can do it as comedy, you know, and do it as parody. But it really, if we can look at somebody across the room, we can, as writers and as people with this theory of mind ability, that an ability that we can develop, we can understand what's going on in the mind. And it's important for us as writers.
Well, I think we're also consciously always seeking a story.
Right.
I think regular people are. I think writers just seek it a little bit more. Like we're always looking for a story. We're always looking for a way to explain, to show. We, again, like we just take it to the extreme, you know.
Or we develop it as a way of seeing, because the being a writer is not all but time. Being a writer is developing your ability to see.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we see is we see others and we understand their thoughts. Like, you know, a sensitive person can be in a room, and if somebody who walks in that's angry, immediately the sensitive person knows it and feels the energy change. If you're on your phone and you're not, you know, you're only like, you know, interacting with a device, you're probably going to miss a lot of human energy. But if you're in the moment and aware, and I think that's what writers do. And I'm thinking of this story you had published in Acentos Review. It's called La Sobrosura.
Uh-huh.
And it's a young man named Diego who's walking around Medellin, and he's just got the music in him. And I love the language, because it goes effortlessly in and out of English and Spanish. And it's a really beautifully written story. But your theory of mind abilities are very evident in here, because you get into this young man's brain and you tell us what he's thinking, and it's completely believable. And that's something you develop, right?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it goes back to my husband and I. My husband's from Medellin, so every December we go there for about a month.
Uh-huh.
So Diego is a real person. I mean, I don't know if his name is Diego. I made it up.
You just observed him.
I observed him at this very intense salsa bar in Medellin. And I watched him for a big chunk of the night. That sounds crazy. There's all these people dancing. It was hot. We could barely move. But in the middle of all this, there was this guy who, you know, was a little chubby.
Uh-huh.
But he was incredibly graceful, and I was just watching him.
Wow.
Like, I enjoyed watching him dance. I didn't even want it, because my husband asked me, like, do you want to dance with him? Like, I can ask him. And I was like, no, I'm going to look so silly. I'm not that good of a dancer. I just want to watch him dance.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And so then I was like, I just started thinking, like, what's that guy's name? And I was like, I think he's Diego. He looks like a Diego. And then it just sort of went from there, and I made this big story about him. I guess even in all my fiction, there's a grain of truth in that I saw something, and then that sparks just like this, I think it's like a domino effect for me, that I start like making the story bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Wow. So you do write all the time.
I think I do.
You write all the time, because, I mean, here you are in a club, and one of the things that could happen very easily is, you know, one can start drinking so much that they just, you know, tune out.
Right.
But you are there.
Yeah, I was
rooted there, and you are observing, and you are projecting consciousness, practicing theory of mind.
Right. Yes. I didn't know I was that fancy, but yes,
yeah,
I was.
Yeah, no. And that's a discipline, because writers need to be able to be in the moment. And one of the things that I'm studying right now, like I was telling you earlier, is the brain. How does a writer take care of the brain? But, you know, one of the things is that writers, like we were talking about AWP earlier, tend to drink a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And drinking alcohol and even other drugs or stimulants has this weird effect. It number one, it roots you in the moment, but it doesn't keep you there very long.
Right.
And the more you drink, the less you're rooted in the moment. And even to the point to where you don't even remember certain things. I mean, if you're excessive drinking. And so, you know, that idea of being in a club and choosing to spend your creative energy observing somebody with compassion, because you have compassion on Diego.
Right.
This guy is not a buffoon.
No.
He's a real person that we really care about. That's beautiful. That's why you're such a great writer.
Thank you.
So when are we going to see your book?
Hopefully soon. Since I was just at AWP, I have a relationship with one of the editors at UNM. That she was very generous with me a couple years ago. I sent her my manuscript.
Oh, Elsie? Is that her name?
Yeah, Elsie. Yeah,
yeah, she's fantastic.
She's amazing and paid me awesome compliments. My book, Por Un Amor, is a memoir. Uh-huh. That if I could go back in time about writing a memoir, I would say that shouldn't have been my first project, because it's hard. It's really hard. So when I sent her my manuscript, she was like, it's great, but I was missing. I had focused so much on my grandmother.
I remember some of those pieces from a class that you were in.
Yeah, I started it here. And then writing yourself is a lot harder than writing other people in your life. I could write about my mom. I could write about my sister. So that was a bit harder, and it took me more time than I anticipated or that I wanted. Because also I had to continuously go back to a place in my life that wasn't necessarily comfortable.
Right?
It's not happy. You're just like, ugh. So I would put off writing and I'd write something else. So I'd be like, okay, I'm going to work on my memoir today. And then I would just start working on something else. Then I would loop back. So, but I finally, now I'm kind of sick of reading about myself. I think that's a good sign.
right?
I think it is. It means that I'm actually ready to like move on.
Right. Okay.
So I'm going to be sending my book out, and hopefully Elsie will take it. If she listens to this, please take it.
But she's already seen a draft.
She's seen a draft, and she gave me extensive notes.
Oh, that's good. Like, that means she cares.
So that's why she paid me a huge compliment, because I know people from small presses, and they're like, we don't take the time to do that.
Nobody takes the time to do that unless they really believe in it.
Yeah. So I hope we met for a little bit at AWP, and fingers crossed.
Right.
There's always a fingers crossed when you send off a manuscript.
Right. We're talking to Yasmin Ramirez, who is not only a fantastic writer, but is also a professor at El Paso Community College. And you're starting up a creative writing program. Tell us a little bit about that. What motivated you to do that?
Honestly, I think it was a little bit of selfishness to start out with.
Oh, absolutely. But that's not selfishness. That's sharing our love.
It is, yeah. Yeah, I want to share my love with the students. When I first started at the college as an adjunct, I begged for a creative writing class. And they gave it to me, which is really rare as an adjunct.
Nice.
But then I noticed that there wasn't really high enrollment. So the class was always in danger of getting canceled. And it's mostly because students weren't aware that we had the class.
Right.
So I would make flyers and like tell my other students, like, hey, take this class with me. And then my enrollment started to go up. And I worked with another a coworker, Rob Santos, another MFAer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We collaborated on this reading series. Uh-huh. I had this brainchild, and thankfully he was like, yes, I'm on. I'll do it. Let's go. So after the end of each semester, we have a reading series featuring all the students.
Mm-hmm.
And we schedule it somewhere on campus. And then our class started growing. Both of our classes are growing because we have two different sections. So now that I'm full-time on tenure track, it's like my baby. They've officially handed over the baby to me. It's just, I think that for me as an undergrad, my degree was in psychology, not writing or English or anything like that. And not that you need a bachelor's in creative writing, but I think just taking some classes and knowing that this is out there would be really helpful. It would have been helpful for me, for sure. So in my selfishness of wanting to share, I guess, right? I want them to read good things. I want them to read different things than they're reading in like the British Lit courses.
You know, one of the things that I heard is that Bach, you know, the musician Bach was a great teacher, you know, and that he put his teaching first. And, you know, yet he also, you know, created some of the best music that's ever been written. I think that, you know, that if we can separate what we love from what we do, then maybe we're not doing it right. You know, I mean, the fact is you love writing and you love teaching and you need to put them together. That's the essence of being a good teacher.
I agree. I think if when I'm talking about writing and when I'm teaching about writing, it kind of goes along with what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
And I give them ideas and I see their stuff. And I mean, granted, you know, it's not always the best stuff, but it helps me, I don't know, stay in that frame of mind.
Absolutely.
Of being analytical and observant and looking at, you know, the threads. You always find like a thread of goodness, even in the stuff that students are having problems with. There's always a thread of goodness that you can sort of pull out for them.
Yeah.
And I think that helps you read your own stuff that way, too.
Right, right. Absolutely. You know, you're using language in unique ways. You're using language in very complex and ways that are supposed to resonate emotionally and spiritually with the reader. And that's just an amazing gift and tool to have, the ability to do that with language. And you're teaching that, you know. And so, yeah, it makes sense that you would want to teach according to, you know, that which you love. I mean, yeah, composition is important.
Reading, yeah. It's a necessary skill, for sure.
Yeah, but more important is putting, you know, all your animo into something. And teachers of creative writing do that. You do that.
Right.
I'm sure you inspire the heck out of your students.
I hope so. I think that's a great word, though, like animo. That is, like, that's what I'm trying to do. That's what I'm hoping to do.
Right.
And when you see that, like, look on their faces, like, ooh, then it's like, okay, all my craziness of running around and reading and teaching and commenting and fitting everything into one schedule makes it worth it.
Can you tell us about an experience with a student or student writing that just kind of blew you away, made you know that you're doing the right thing by being a teacher?
I do. I have two, actually. I'll tell you the most recent, though. I had a student last semester who, she came in my class. She was really quiet. You know, didn't really say much, but attentive, right? She was there. And it wasn't until about the middle of the semester, like when we'd done two workshops, that she got a little bit more vocal. And then she kind of stayed after class because she wrote this amazing poem that I was like, wow, this is impressive, right? and she sort of, you know, you could see where she stood out from her classmates. It was very evident. And so I asked her, like, hey, so what are you going to do? And she's like, well, I was an English major, but, you know, in your class, the first week I almost dropped it because I didn't really want to be a creative writer, but I've had so much fun. Like, I'm thinking of doing something else. And so I was like, oh, wow. That made me feel like, I mean, I guess I just showed her that she was a really good writer. She just thought she was like, yeah, okay, I can write.
Right.
She struck a chord with all of us in the classroom, and it was just really... really nice. Like, when she left, I felt like warm all over, you know.
Beautiful.
Because I didn't do much but just give her some encouragement. Like, she had the raw talent there.
You know, as creative writers, I think a lot of us that persist, because I was asking you at the beginning, how do you keep writing? And we just persist. We develop a lifestyle that persists, and we can't live without it. I mean, let's face it, if we could not write, we probably would. There's usually a teacher or a mentor somewhere in our past that did something really small, like I remember mine said, you're good at this. Do you remember a mentor that encouraged you so much that you just kind of knew that you had to, that you were doing the right thing?
If I think back, you're going to laugh. You know, we always keep like boxes of mementos and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So a couple years ago, I was going through a box of mementos and I found this program of something I participated in high school. And it had like little bios of what do you want to be when you grow up. And I didn't know that. I didn't even remember saying this. But I said I wanted to be a poet and a writer.
Wow.
And I had a high school teacher, actually. Her name was Miss Duncan. And I was kind of, like, my senior year, I was kind of a slacker because I planned to graduate early.
Right.
But I ended up just staying to hang out with my friends, essentially. So I'd only go to school half a day. And, you know, I had like two creative writing classes and I would just go and sit it was a computer lab and she'd let me write and do whatever I wanted, essentially.
Right.
But she was really cool about it. Right. She'd give me feedback and told me this, something similar, like, this was good. But, you know, in high school, you see a whole bunch of teachers, and that was a long time ago for me. But I remember her name.
Wow.
So the fact that she would let me go and hang out in her classroom and just write, and it was like no pressure. As long as I was in her room, then it was really nice. And when I found that, that, you know, I want to be a poet and write. I don't know where I said poet, though, because I don't ever remember writing poetry. Then I remembered her and I had like this flood of, oh, yeah. But I hadn't. It sort of, it was like locked away like in a box.
Oh, that's beautiful, yeah.
Kind of literally.
You know, and even if you didn't remember the details before that point, that glow was always there. That glow was in you. And
right. Because even, you know, when I was majoring in psychology, when I took a break before grad school, I always had a journal with me. I always had something I would write with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was working retail in Dallas, and I was in the food court.
Writing out conversations
and writing stories. And I went through that very, like, embarrassing, you know, where you don't want to let anyone read your stuff and all those stages. I didn't know what I was doing, though. If I think back now from where I am, I'm like, oh, yeah, I was going through the stages of learning to be a writer, I guess, learning what it was for me anyway. But I didn't know then. I was just, you know, scribbling in a notebook.
That's interesting because you can go into your past, you know, from the time that you remember until where you are now, and you could interpret almost everything in a very correct way as stages of your artistic development, you know, as a writer. It's a lifelong thing. And if we quit learning and quit developing, we should quit.
Yeah, no, we should quit. Because I think it is always reading new stuff, writing new stuff, investigating new things.
I want to ask you, we have very little time, but I wanted to ask you about this opportunity that you have in Belgium.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell us about that? That's exciting.
I'm super excited. I didn't think it was going to happen. So one of my goals for 2018 was to get a fellowship because I'd never done anything like that. And I was just like, you know what? I want to try this. I want to do it. So I applied to two. I really wanted one in Mexico. That's where I really, really wanted to go. And then I found the one in Belgium. And I thought, that's such a long shot. But I did everything. I filled out the application and I sent it off. And I almost kind of forgot about it because I was so focused on the response from Mexico. Like, I really, really wanted that one. And then, like, the earthquake happened, so it delayed their responses.
Oh, wow.
And I was dying. I was like, oh, my God.
Like, God is interfering and saying, Yasmin, be patient. I have something great for you.
Yeah. And then, you know, I got the no from Mexico. It was a very nice no. But I was just super bummed.
Yeah,
and then a week later, you know, and I woke up in the morning, looking at my phone. I have an email. And I saw, you know, the title of the email was residency something something, and it started with we received a lot of applicants, so I thought it was going to be a no. I was like, oh, come on, really, again? And then I kept reading and I was like, wait, what? Because then it said congratulations.
Wow, you should have said congratulations in the
it psyched
That's
me
cool.
out. It was like we had a lot of applicants, so I thought it was the for sure no. So I get to go. I'm going to be about an hour outside of Brussels for 2 weeks in July.
You're going to be close to a lot of things. That'll be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Go to Amsterdam and Paris. And
I'm going to stay a couple weeks
after. You don't like Paris. I remember you said
you don't like Paris.
Too much like Juarez. That's what you told me.
I did. I think I just saw the bad side of Paris.
Yeah, you know why? Because you went into the Gare du Nord from London, I assume. And that is a lot of graffiti in that neighborhood
and a lot of garbage
in the street. So if that's the first thing you see of Paris, I could imagine how that could be.
Yes, yeah. That's what I saw of Paris, homeless people. And I just come from London and it's all nice and clean.
London's beautiful.
And, yeah. So it sounds very bougie for me to say, like, I didn't like Paris, but I didn't have the best time in Paris.
Right. Yeah. No, you know, some people like some cities, some people don't. The point is, it's going to be a great experience. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And that was based on the writing sample.
The writing sample. And then I pitched a project. So I have a new project I've already kind of started working on and reading, at least research-wise. I'm going to do something related to music. I have, like, a female character. She's going to be a lead singer of a band, but she's going to be kind of like Latina. Not kind of. She's going to be Latina, but she's going to struggle a little bit with identity. But also everything is going to be linked to music. So it's going to be very, very, like, each chapter is going to be a song.
Sounds like it could be marketed as a YA novel, too, because those are incredibly, incredibly popular.
Well, it's going to get a little
popular.
Intimate in places, so I don't know if it could totally go away.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Maybe.
Wherever
it
goes, you know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, Ben Sines, who writes brilliant YA novels, has never sat down to write a YA novel.
That's true.
Never.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So I don't know. Let's see where she takes me.
Yeah.
Right now, I say she because she's still, like, coming to life in my brain. She's making lists of her favorite songs. And I've just been reading a lot of books on music.
So how long are you going to be in Belgium?
2 weeks. Then I'm going to be in Europe for 2 more weeks.
Where are you going after that?
I'm not quite sure. I think I'm just going to take the train around Belgium and then I am going to go to Amsterdam, though.
Nice. Yeah, I love Amsterdam. It's one of my favorite cities.
I've never been.
Great food. And also, Amsterdam has changed from its reputation of its seedy days. Incredibly changed.
Okay. I'm a huge foodie, so that excites me.
Oh, it's great food. Great food, yeah. Okay. And just really a lot of... They're even cleaning up the red light district.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're regentrifying it and making it hipster.
Okay.
And I imagine within the next 10 years or so, that it'll be almost entirely eliminated, the red light district, because it's changing. It's becoming an international financial seat for Europe. And yeah, it's just a really, really fantastic city. Really expensive, though.
Yes, I'm saving my pennies.
Yeah,
I already bought my plane ticket. My husband's going to meet me there after the residency.
Nice,
so we're going to go around together. It's his first time in Europe.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Wow. So it's going to be awesome. So, yeah, we're not eating ramen right now or anything, but we are safe. We're going to save up everything we can for eating wonderful foods and seeing wonderful places.
You know, one of the cool things about traveling so much is it teaches you how to see. You know, however, I was talking about, you know, riders need to develop that ability to see. Traveling teaches you how to see because you're in such a strange environment. But the cool thing about it is when you come home, you see with different eyes.
You do, very much so. Every time I come home from Medellin, I see home in a different way.
Yeah.
But I think you become more observant also because it's, you know, it's a different culture.
Yeah.
So you don't want to overstep your boundaries or do something that could be kind of construed as rude. And so I always try to observe people's, it goes back to body language for me.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that we love to do when we're traveling in Medellin or, you know, or Paris or wherever is find a little cafe. We've never been to, and not a chain. We don't walk into the McDonald's.
No.
And we don't walk into the Starbucks's. We like the little independent ones.
Yes.
And so when we return to El Paso, it's really interesting to try that, to go through El Paso and just see a little cafe you've never been to and go in there and open up your laptop and have some coffee.
Yes, that's true. That's one of my favorite. You know, I wrote, I think, half of my thesis at Village Inn, which is not a cafe, but I like writing in booths.
Well, it is.
Well, yeah. It is, but it's, you know.
Even though it's a chain, the fact is it's culturally a parallel to what you would find in Europe.
Right. Or, I mean, here, like Giovanni Bronson's is great.
Right. Yeah, that's a good place.
That's a good place to write. I've written there. It's really great. They leave you alone. You can drink coffee and you can write there for a long time. And a lot of interesting people go in there.
Wow. You know, the first time I traveled, it was in Mexico. I went to Mexico City and Cuernavaca. And I remember when I returned back here, you know, it just gave me this opportunity to see things so differently. Traveling is a good thing for a writer. I don't think you need to travel, but and you do. You travel a lot, don't you? You just got back from Tampa.
I did,
you're going to Belgium.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to Orlando in the summer.
Oh, Orlando.
Yeah.
and what about Medellin?
Medellin, probably December.
Oh, nice. Yeah, when the weather's nice.
The weather's nice year-round there.
That's true. The city of eternal spring.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I'd like to thank my guest, Yasmin Ramirez, for joining us on Words on a Wire. You can follow her on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Yasmo8.
And on Instagram, and where else can they, where can they find your blog?
My blog is on Blogger, actually, blogger.com. So it's just, and then, I like that phrase because it's like, and then what happened?
Nice, yeah.
So I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
All right.
No Snapchat. I don't snap.
You don't swipe left or right? Is that Snapchat or that's something
that's
else? I don't know anything. I'm an old guy. Anyway, Yasmin, thank you so much for joining me on Words on a Wire.
Thank you for having me.
And let us know when your book comes out. We'll get you on the show to talk about that.
Okay, great.
I'm Daniel Chacon. I'd like to thank our producer, Lauren Terrazas. And thank you for joining us. And we'll see you next week.